is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, March 9th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney, taping the podcast today from Port St. Lucie, the Mets camp, and back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk. Some injury news on Sunday. Rangers outfielder Willie Calhoun suffered a fractured jaw after being hit by a pitch. He left the field on a cart. Chris Woodward, his manager, actually left the exhibition game on Sunday to go check on Calhoun at the hospital. The Astros pulled Justin Verlander from his second spring start with sore triceps. He was supposed to pitch four innings, but he was pulled after two innings. Here's Dusty Baker, the manager, on Verlander's arm soreness.
You know, he just had some tricep soreness, and so we took him out for precaution and send him, to go get some tests run, just to make sure that it's nothing. So we just have to wait until the test run.
On Friday, Yankees manager Aaron Boone announced that Aaron Judge has a broken rib. They're going to check him again in 2 weeks and see what his progress is. The Cardinals renewed the contract of Jack Flaherty for 2020. They couldn't agree to a deal. This is not really that big of a deal for now, but you do wonder how it's going to affect Jack Flaherty's relationship with the Cardinals as we move forward. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirchen about these spring training injuries and about all access in spring training this year. But first, support for Baseball Tonight comes from Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you'll earn unlimited 5% back at Walmart Online. That's 5% back at Walmart Online when you grab new shades for your beach trip, new boots for your hiking trip, or noise-canceling headphones when you need some vacation me time. You'll also earn 2% at Walmart stores, restaurants, and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One, N.A.
Seamheads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchen on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, look, we've got on-field injuries to talk about, and those are important for those teams, but not as important as what's going on with the Orioles' Trey Mancini. Their manager, Brandon Hyde, made an announcement after their game on Saturday that Mancini is going to miss some time. He didn't say how much. He referred to the medical situation that he had as a non-baseball-related medical procedure. We don't have more information than that. His teammates on Sunday, in speaking with reporters, spoke very hopefully on his behalf and talked about what a great guy he is. I've gotten to know Trey a little bit, Tim, but I know because you live in the Baltimore, Washington area, you know him better than me. I'm sure you share my thoughts being sent out to him and hope all's well.
Yeah, he's one of the real good guys in the game, Buster. I've known him for a few years. I was there for his major league debut. He's a local guy in every way. And just being in the big leagues was so important to him, especially to play for the Orioles. And now to have this happen, exactly what this is, we're not sure. But he's not just the best and most reliable player on the team. He's as good a guy as there is in the game. And let's just hope for his sake and for the Orioles' sake, for his family's sake, that whatever this is, it can be taken care of and we can get him back to normal as soon as possible. But we're just going to have to wait and see. Again, the Orioles are going to miss him so much on the field and, of course, in the clubhouse.
So last week was All Access Week for ESPN with its exhibition games. This was the last of the four. It happened in a game that you were broadcasting. Freddie Freeman was on first base.
Please don't. Oh, here we go. Oh, watch this. There's wind, boys. There's wind. There's wind. There's wind.
He's right.
It's going.
Right.
There's wind. Come on.
That's awesome.
That is a catchable fly ball, and he knew right away it was going to fall.
That's right. He knew the wind was going to be tough, and he's cutting those backs. He knows right here. Watch, waving him.
Look at
this. Give us a little slide and the point. I love it.
That's right. The ball's hitting the air. Freddie Freeman breaking from first base, saying there's wind, and when he slid across home plate, he went with a flourish, Tim, pointing up at you guys in the booth, you and Chipper Jones, Eduardo Perez and Matt Vasgersian. How much fun was that?
Well, that's one of the greatest trips around the bases that I've ever seen. And the look on Freddie Freeman's face when he looked at us in the press box, thrust his hands in the air, looked at Ravi, Eddie, Chipper, and me, and started screaming. It was hilarious. And again, Chipper was up there with us, and he's like Chipper's best friend, and they've been talking the entire at bat and trip around the bases. But just another reminder what great baseball player, great base runners know about. And that's that ball's in the wind. It's sunny. And you could tell right away he knew, I'm going to score on this ball. It was priceless. And that kind of joy that a star player can show. I understand it's just an exhibition game, Buster, but that's the kind of joy we're asking our players to show in the playing of the game. We keep talking about there's not enough personality in the game. You know, we don't market the players well enough. That trip around the bases tells you virtually everything you need to know about Freddie Freeman. And that's what more baseball fans need to see on a daily basis. The entire week was spectacular. I did two of those four games. It's the most fun I've had doing a spring training game ever this week. And I did Mookie Betts each of the last 2 years. I didn't think it could get better than that, and it did.
Yeah, and to reiterate, we did four of these games last week, and yet we probably could generate, Tim, a top 10 of great moments in just four meaningless exhibition games in the first week of March. And this one in particular was stuck out to me because Freddie Freeman happens to be the favorite player of my son, who is a crazy Braves fan. He's 15 years old, and in a sense, he's like a great focus group of one for me because he's at the exact age of the fans that Major League Baseball is targeting, that they're trying to connect with. And I've told you this before, that, you know, in past seasons, when I've sat down to watch games during the course of the day, I invite him to sit next to me. He goes, no, it's too boring. Because you know what? In his generation, they have all these apps, and he's got his phone, he's got the Xbox, he's got the headphones, he's talking with his friends all the time. He's not going to sit around and wait for two full innings, for 45 minutes, for something interesting to happen. And so he keeps up with the Braves, he follows the results, he follows the box score, but he finds the, you know, batter to batter, out to out, inning to inning coverage of Major League Baseball, in his word, to be boring, right? Well, the other day after this happened, I was talking to him on Saturday, the day after this great run around the bases by Freddie Freeman, and I said, Jake, how you doing today? And he said, there's wind, Dad! There's wind! And I was like, what? And I was confused momentarily, and then he said, you're not getting it. It was a reference, of course, to Freddie Freeman's trip around the bases, and Jake says to me, if they did that all the time, I would watch. And my hope is, and I wrote about this in a Sunday column this weekend, that Major League Baseball, the Player Association, could see the response to that and see all these great moments generated in four meaningless exhibition games in March and say, you know what? Let's push the envelope on this thing. I think you and I would agree that a guy like Nick Markakis, famously reticent, is not going to be a guy who's going to be comfortable wearing a mic. He's more old school. But this younger generation of players, guys like Dom Smith and Pete Alonso, they're much more comfortable with the idea. And so I'm beginning to sort of think back on comments I've made where could we do this during the regular season? And in the past, I've said no. Now I'm like, you know what? You really could. You really could do it, because I think the players are much more comfortable with it than people realize.
I agree, Buster. And look, you don't have to do what Kevin Plawecki did the other day with us, which was also priceless. We had a microphone on a catcher in a major league game, granted an exhibition game. It was tremendous. He basically told us what was coming. And then when he made a throw at a second, as he's throwing, he goes, oh, I palmed it, meaning the ball got too much into his palm. He didn't get a great grip. Maybe we don't have that kind of level in a major league game. Maybe we don't have guys yucking it up all the time. But to have major league players mic'd and explaining what's going on during the course of a game is absolutely tremendous. And I agree now. I think with all the changes we're trying to make in baseball to make it more interesting, including three batter minimums, which I don't think is going to work. Here is something that's right in front of our eyes that everybody wins from. The media, of course, makes a great broadcast. The players win no matter how you look at it because they are humanized and personalized in a way that they don't get to do normally, and therefore the game wins also. So I think it's time to try this. I know every manager out there will say, no, not in a real game. I understand. But I think there's a way to do this, and I think the Players Association especially should strongly consider this.
So typically when I post a Sunday column, Tim, I'll get like 50 likes on a column when I post it on Twitter. On the column I posted yesterday, I got like 300. And there was this absolute ocean of response for people saying, I loved it. That was tremendous. And I really feel like no sport is better suited for this than baseball because there's so many people standing around doing nothing who are sitting and watching the game. You know, maybe a Nick Markakis might not want to wear the microphone while he's in the box. But you know what? We got eight relievers sitting out in the bullpen, especially in the first five innings, and they're doing nothing. We have the starting pitchers on their off days. We have outfielders. You have some infielders who would be comfortable, I think, wearing this during the game. Think of someone like Francisco Lindor. He would love this. So no sport is better suited for this. And I don't think there's a sport that needs it more than baseball does because there's so much downtime between bits of action.
Yeah, and we tried to mic Francisco Lindor in Puerto Rico a couple of years ago. And the most playful manager of all time, Tito Francona, who's a dear friend of all of ours on Baseball Tonight and ESPN, because he worked for us, said, no, we're not going to do that. So when Tito says no, that's when you know this is there's a big dividing line between an exhibition game and a real game. But that was 2 years ago, and we've had, again, multiple all-access games since, and everybody sees how great this works. And believe me, Buster, for those two games that I did this week, we didn't have to try very hard to get people to get mic'd up. They were coming to us saying, is it okay if I wear a mic during the game? The answer is an emphatic yes, of course. And that's why if the players are that much on board, maybe we should try it in a regular season game and see how it goes.
Well, and that would be a case, too, where I would sit down with Tito and I'd say, look, this needs to happen. This for the overall health of your sport in connecting with people like my 15-year-old son, it would help immensely. And you have to begin to reset your expectations because you and I know, like I used in my column the example of Cal Ripken. Cal Ripken set some sort of a major league record for signing autographs, but the idea of Cal Ripken taking a selfie, right, or sending some sort of Twitter post, forget it. That's not something that he would do. But again, these players in this era, they're out there all the time. They're out there with social media. They're putting selfies out there, and so they're much more comfortable with it, and the sport needs it. All right, speaking of all access, this happened in a Padres game yesterday. Give a listen.
Six in a row retired by Lopez as Grisham stands in.
How much for a churro? $5? Here. Take that. Give him the whole thing.
Oh. Throwing 20s around. Wow.
Hey. You're my favorite vendor. That's all for you right there.
Wow. Big spender.
Super Dipper.
Super Dipper.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Best vendor.
Oh, the extra churro. Nice.
Yeah, so that was Padres broadcaster Mark Grant buying a churro at a Padres game, Tim, alongside his play-by-play man, Don Arcelo. I've never asked you if you know Mud Grant, but I'm assuming you do.
Of course, and he would be the first one to buy a churro during a game and commend the vendor for it. I mean, he's one of the most playful guys you'll ever see. One reason he's a great broadcaster, that's a great booth. So Mark Grant, he was one of my go-to guys when he played. He always made me laugh and smile. And he's doing it again as a broadcaster.
We found out some news on Friday from Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager. Aaron Judge has a stress fracture with a rib, and this, they feel like, could date back to last September. Give a listen to Aaron Boone.
So he has a stress fracture of the first right rib.
obviously a lot of tests to get. It's a tough diagnosis to find. So that's what we're dealing with. It does, you know, it's probably an injury that dates back to September when he dove, we think.
And he talked about the plan ahead for Aaron Judge.
We'll reassess in 2 weeks of where he's at, as far as, you know, if the bone's healing, and then, you know, hopefully have an idea of what that looks like, and then kind of reassess at that point.
And it's possible that in a month or 6 weeks that this is all behind him now that they know what the deal is. But, boy, more frustration for the Yankees and injuries, Tim.
Yeah, and this is confusing to say the least, that we think this happened in September, and then near the middle of March, they finally figured out what it is. You were wondering what was happening before then, because anyone who's ever cracked a rib, and on my tiny level, I did that once, and I sneezed with a cracked rib, and I'm not sure I've ever been in that kind of pain. That stuff doesn't go away. But this is another bad sign for the Yankees. It looks like they're cursed in some way with these injuries. Granted, they played through a bunch of things last year and still won 100 games, and I fully expect them to be a great team this year. But this is spooky, Buster, that it's happening this often, and it's happening to star players, not just to the team, but for the game. So they got to get this straight. They got to hope it's just 2 weeks of rest, make a decision, don't need surgery, and get Aaron Judge back as soon as possible. But who could be optimistic about this with everything that's gone on here lately?
And Justin Verlander was pulled from his second spring start with a sore triceps. Tim, a lot has gone on with the Astros since the beginning of the calendar year, the firing of their manager, the firing of their general manager. Of all the things affecting the wins and losses of the 2020 Houston Astros, this might be the most important. What do you think?
Yeah, this is big trouble if there's anything wrong with Justin Verlander, because even though the Astros are really good and their lineup's going to score a million runs, without Gerrit Cole, they're not going to be the same pitching staff. And now, if Justin Verlander is hurt and they lose both, at least for a while, of the top two guys in that rotation, that's a real problem. And Verlander, as strong as he is, and he is unbelievably strong, he's mid-30s now, and you start to see tricep injuries, and maybe it's just a precaution, but he can usually get through things like that, and to come out after two instead of going four, we really need to keep our eyes on this, because they're in the division with the Oakland A's, who I just saw the other day. They're pretty darn good. They cannot afford any sort of significant injury to Justin Verlander.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster. Talk to you soon.
Before we continue with Sarah Langs, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, Sports with Katie Nolan. It's a weekly show about sports and all things tangentially related to sports. Its friends would describe it as curious, fun, and a podcast. Download and subscribe to Sports with Katie Nolan wherever you get your podcasts.
Numbers Game.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I'm in Mets camp this morning. I saw the Braves yesterday. I'm waffling between who I'm going to pick between these two teams. And I was leaning toward picking the Mets to win the division. Now I'm beginning to wonder if I'm going to wind up picking the Braves. What do you think?
You know, I was just talking to someone about this the other day. I just don't know if I believe enough in that Braves starting pitching, you know, but then it's Braves starting pitching or Mets bullpen, you know, and what you're going to kind of put your faith in, because I think both teams offensively will be pretty good. I haven't decided who I'm picking yet. So this is me getting around answering.
All right, let's talk about the Red Sox, who found out last week that Chris Sale is going to be out for an indefinite period of time. How has this affected, in your eyes, the Red Sox win projection?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to go down. I mean, we knew that they at least weren't going to start the season with him. We knew that because of his illness that he came to camp with and the fact that he didn't get to ramp up quite in time. But, you know, Fangraphs has them at 88.1 wins right now, 88.1, which isn't really including injuries or anything like that, to my understanding. And I think it has to be below that. I mean, I think that the big conversation with them has been whether they will match their win total from last year. And I think it's going to hinge on this pitching, because, you know, Rafael Devers had that huge breakout last year, and I think that's going to continue. And obviously losing Mookie Betts is a big blow offensively, but I think they'll be okay in that respect. But Eduardo Rodriguez had a good year last year. I mean, you have to assume he's the opening day starter. I don't think they've announced it yet. But then you're getting to, you know, Nate Eovaldi, who's pretty injury prone as well. Obviously an electric pitcher when he's on and healthy, but you never know. Martin Perez, who had a 5.12 ERA last year with the Twins. He had a 4.66 FIP, which tells us the Twins defense, which was not good last year, didn't do him any favors, but even still, you don't know how reliable that's going to be. And I saw that they picked up Colin McHugh the other day, and you have to think that's related and that he could find his way into that rotation, especially depending how long Sale is out. But I mean, I have to imagine in the lower end of the 80s, at least at this point, if they're not going to have Sale all year or potentially.
The White Sox have locked up a number of their young players now to extensions. In your eyes, what's a possible risk reward in all these deals?
I mean, there, you know, there's always a risk. You never know what a player is going to be. And especially when you lock them up to these extensions, when they're still, you know, at these young points in their career, there's always a chance that, you know, the year they just had was the best year they're going to have. But I think that the reward is huge. I mean, they have Moncada on the list with Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson. They signed to an extension back in 2017. I mean, that's sort of their offensive core is in place. They re-signed Jose Abreu to a bit of an extension as well with 3 years. He's sort of the old guard at this point. And, you know, it sets them up to sign any free agents as they come. And I think that we've talked about how the White Sox are sort of the fun new team. Probably not this year, probably next year, but, you know, it's definitely an attractive spot, and I think they're going to be really good, and it certainly gives them a lot less to wonder about. I'm curious if, you know, Lucas Giolito, if his last year, what he had is enough that he could be next on this list, because this is notably, you know, not really their pitchers. And that's, they're a little bit more unreliable, and there have been some injuries, obviously, with Kopech, and Giolito had that really bad year 2 years ago, but I'm interested to see whether that could be next.
Yeah, and Michael Kopech would be another guy,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, who has so much promise, and we were talking about him the other day and in the American League Central preview to come about just what an impact-type performer he could be. Give me the name of a Rookie of the Year candidate who's caught your eye this spring.
Yeah, so I was first thinking of a White Sox. I was thinking of Luis Robert, but I want to go with Nate Pearson. I mean, simply because, you know, this guy has not pitched in the majors yet, and he's already getting, you know, the pitching ninja treatment on Twitter, and I think that that's certainly, you know, eye-catching. He's the number 8 prospect in all of baseball. He's the number 1 prospect in the Blue Jays organization. He's a righty. He was thrown up to 99 the other day. He's thrown 5 innings this spring. He hasn't allowed a hit yet. It's spring training, but that's still pretty good. He's had 3 strikeouts in each of his 3 appearances. And, you know, I think we were sort of expecting and chalking up that, you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. would win the American League Rookie of the Year last year. And obviously that didn't happen. It was Yordan Alvarez, but maybe this year we get it. And the last Blue Jays player to win Rookie of the Year was Eric Hinsky in 2002. And the only other was Alfredo Griffin in 1979. He tied with John Castino. So I thought that was interesting. I couldn't remember that, which means I didn't look it up for Vlad, but now we know.
There you go. All right, Sarah. I think I'm going to pick the Braves. Sorry.
I think I probably am, too. I mean, how can you pick against Ronald Acuna Jr., you know?
Oof. Yeah, that team, and just talking with their players, all the things that they do well, yeah, they've got some concerns. The other thing, too, is there is a lot of quiet confidence about Austin Riley and his ability to bounce back. Apparently, he's worked on his swing, and one player said to me yesterday that he thinks he's going to be an absolute star. So
we'll
see how that goes. Maybe not right away, but generally speaking. All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. Our friend Eric E. Esoteric Eric Zero writes in, "Hey guys, if you had a documentary film crew at your disposal and could dispatch them to follow any team's 2020 season, which team would you pick and why?"
Eric, I feel like you already know the answer to this. I know Taylor does. Of course, there's only one answer to this.
Only one.
The Houston Astros. Because they're going to be going through something we've never seen before.
Mark Sherman at Shark Merman writes in, "Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge played a combined 120 games in 2019, over under 120 combined games for the Yankee Sluggers in 2020.
Isn't that incredible?
That's
that
crazy.
Again, we're talking about injuries. I would take the over. We don't have any indication yet that what Stanton's dealing with his cap is a major injury. I know he's got the history, but I'm going to say the over. That's only 60 games apiece. I think they'll do that.
I'm with you there. Steve at LV Gamblers writes in, how do you think the Astros will be handled in the All-Star Game balloting this year? Will they be shunned or will they be sent to Dodger Stadium for a nationally televised public shaming?
Wow.
Interesting scenario.
Steve going dark on us the way you did it. I do think they're probably going to lose some All-Star votes. I think that's just the reality. I know that because anytime I tweet it, like the other day, I tweeted out something about one of their players doing something good in an exhibition game. And immediately there was this tsunami of responses of, well, yeah, they cheated. Well, yeah, they did this. Well, yeah, they did that. So I do think it's going to cost them in the eyes of the public opinion.
I believe so as well. Thanks for the wonderful tweets, everyone. Keep them coming. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets. We have the AL Central preview coming up tomorrow and the NL East on Thursday.
There we go. That's it for today. My thanks today to Tim Kirchin, to Sarah Langs, and to Taylor Schwenk back in Bristol. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.